The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer, member FINRA, SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Salnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Salnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.
This is the Retirement and IRA Show coming to you from beautiful Northern Colorado. Join us as certified financial planner Jim Salnier, as well as Colorado State University finance instructor and certified financial planner Chris Stein, teach you about IRAs, 401ks, annuities, Social Security, pension plans, and estate planning in a fun and enjoyable show. Whether you are listening live in Colorado or streaming from their website or iTunes podcast, Jim and Chris want you to know that they're available to help you plan for your retirement. Just visit their website at jimhelps.com. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. And click the Meet the Team button on the homepage. Now, here's Jim and Chris with today's show.
Well, welcome to the Retirement and IRA Show Q&A edition for this week. Got a bit of a change up. There's no Social Security question right off the bat, so that's the one thing I do know about the upcoming show and its topic lists. No Social Security expected. So the rest of it is free-for-all. Jim's got the pile. He's been rummaging through it today to find some nice questions for the show today. And he'll have to share with us what he's got. And I'm sure he's kind of happy today because NFL football has started and his Patriots are 1-0.
We did win. Cam Newton can't keep doing it.
Well, you say it like you participated in some way.
As a fan, we say we. Okay. My cheering definitely helped the team. I can feel it. But there's no way Cam Newton's going to be able to keep doing what he's doing and expect to make the season without getting hurt. So hopefully Bill Belichick realizes that. And Josh McDaniels, the offensive coordinator, and won't keep throwing Cam Newton to the Lions, if you will. But overall, a good game. I enjoyed it. And equally enjoyable was watching Mr. Tom Brady not do quite as well as he had hoped in his debut with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Oh, nice. I like how you did that.
Well, that's the new nickname they're calling
the Tampa Bay.
The Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
I see, yeah.
The traitor, in other words.
He's just watching out for himself and his family.
Well, we shall see. Although, with Brady, you never know. He could now go for the rest of the season 15-0. So, who knows what's going to happen. But, anyways, overall, it was a good football weekend, mm-hmm. I thought.
Better than the week before.
More football than the week before. Hopefully they can keep COVID at bay and keep playing the games. A little odd not having fans in the stands. I know they're going to start having fans in a couple of weeks here down in the Denver area, but in an 80,000-person stadium, they're going to have, 5,000?
5,700.
5,700. Yeah. It's just so, that's a rounding error practically. So who knows, but at least it'll be a little bit better. We'll see how it happens. Okay. As you did say, absolutely no Social Security questions today. I still cannot find my missing Social Security questions, and we went a week without getting a Social Security question in. So if anybody has a Social Security question, feel free to ask it. You will rise to the top, if you will. Because we, for a while, had been leading with Social Security questions, and there's just kind of a little habit that I was going to continue doing until somehow all my Social Security questions disappeared. You know, I think I figured out, Chris, what happened to them.
What's that?
You're probably not going to like my theory.
Uh-oh. What?
Well, It just I have thought of this till the cows come home, of where all my Social Security questions could go.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, you delegated me to the true attic of our office building.
You're not going to blame it on the mice, are you?
No, that would be too logical. I had to really think long and hard on this one.
Yeah.
And what I feel happened, because they were on the little cod table in the attic,
mm-hmm.
which is now my recording studio,
mm-hmm.
with that one little light bulb behind me, you mm-hmm. know, that
yeah.
Halogen
very,
light bulb.
Very pleasant in
yeah,
there.
It is.
It's called beautiful. Mood lighting.
It's beautiful in here. However, it is right in front of the bathroom door.
Yeah.
Where my said dead mouse, the little pet I have, yeah. Is under the sink. You know, the one mm-hmm. I pointed out to you. Okay, yeah. So I think you're not going to like hearing this. I think you leaving your luxurious little area, which is huge with windows and ceiling fans and mm-hmm. air conditioning, and as you came into the bathroom, noticed my pile of Social Security questions, mm-hmm. which all had Social Security written on the top of each page, held with a paperclip together, one of the big paperclips. I mean, that thing's like 2 inches long. You picked it up, knowing that I don't go over the questions with you ahead of time. You slid the paperclip off, put the empty paperclip back on my card table, and slithered away, kind of like the Grinch after he stole Cindy Who's Christmas gifts. You just slithered away back into your office in an effort to read the questions ahead of time to make yourself look even more brilliant on Social Security than you are, and you forgot to bring the questions back.
That was a long story to accuse me of taking your questions.
It's the only thing that makes sense. Can you think of anything else?
They're probably in the back seat of your car or something.
No. It's not
me. You take them back and forth to your house.
In a briefcase. Not haphazardly loose. It makes perfect sense to me, and I'm sure all our listeners are nodding their heads in agreement.
I'll glance around and see if I unwittingly or unknowingly moved your questions into my office. But
well, if you could slither them mm-hmm. back in, Mr. Grinch.
If I find them, I'll slither them right back onto your table.
Slither right back in. No questions asked.
Okay.
If whoever took my questions was to just bring them back, there will be no questions asked.
Okay.
Just want to get that out there.
I'll take that to heart.
In the meantime, if you asked a Social Security question and you're wondering, when the hell are these guys going to answer my Social Security question?
Might want to send it in again.
You might want to send it to me again.
Okay.
Because y'all know you send everything to me electronically. That's just how the world works. And I print them. And it's a pretty infallible processing system I have here. I print them. I write down on them what the topic is. And I put them with all the other emails of the same topic, held securely in place by 2-inch paper clips. And I thought it was a foolproof system until all our Social Security questions disappeared.
Are you just doing this to eat up time since
Absolutely
we don't have a
no.
question to ask?
No, we got tons of other questions.
Okay.
So,
well, let's get to one.
I am. The one I wanted to lead with, I can't find. gosh.
Wow.
Well, all right, let me ask something else then. Let me just ask the one that's right here on the top of my page. Okay, this one's a pretty good one.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'll look for the one that I wanted to answer.
Okay.
Dear Jim and Chris, this is from a Georgette from apparently no state, because she doesn't have mm-hmm. the state listed here, but we will call her Georgette. She lives somewhere in the United States. And it begins, Dear Jim and Chris. I enjoy your podcast tremendously and learned a lot from it. I have a question about the lifetime estate tax exemption.
Hmm.
I know that the current estate tax exemption is approximately $11.7 million per person and will be reduced to approximately $5.4 million per person when the Trump tax law expires mm-hmm. the end of 2025. It may even go lower if Biden is elected president.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't want to read political in if it's going to go higher or lower because of him, but I think you agree with me, Chris, that eventually it's going lower, irrespective of who the president is.
Yeah. No matter who the president is, it could change.
Exactly.
So don't hang your hat on one or the other. This is something, obviously, that's controlled by Congress, and they can do either. It's been raised and lowered in both types of administrations, okay, if you will.
Okay, but I personally believe, folks, it is going lower, and it's going to go a lot lower. Just like we predicted, the stretch IRA was going to go the way of the dodo bird, and it did. It didn't go back to the five-year rule. It went to the 10-year rule, as you all know, thanks to the Secure Act. But my money is still riding on the five-year rule, eventually replacing the 10-year rule. And my money is riding on the estate tax exemption, moving a hell of a lot lower than the $11.7 million it is now. Okay, if I gift my daughter property with a market value of $500,000 today, will it reduce my lifetime estate tax exemption by that amount if the estate tax exemption is ever changed or remains level? Or does my lifetime estate tax exemption reset to whatever the new amount is and starts fresh, unaffected by any previous gifts that I may have given before the change in the law? Mm-hmm. It's a very good question.
It is a good question, and not a question like we have gotten before.
No.
A new topic, if you
will. I wish it worked her way.
I wish it did.
Reset. Start again. Yeah. Unfortunately, listener and listeners, it doesn't work the latter. It works the former in her description. What would happen? Let's just say she did gift $500,000 to her daughter or to her favorite podcast host, mm-hmm, you know, something like that. Mm-hmm. And she gifted $500,000 to this person. Mm-hmm. If her exemption right now is 11.7 million and she gifts $500,000, she will file an estate tax return. And on that estate tax return, is she is going to declare not the $500,000 she gave. How much does she put on there?
She's going to put $485,000 because the first $15,000 is going to be captured in the annual gift tax exclusion amount.
Right.
So she is over gifting, if you will, beyond the exclusion
by
amount.
$485,000.
So she's going to report that. And is not going to immediately owe any kind of estate tax on it.
Gift tax.
This is
part of the gift tax.
Yes.
The estate and gift tax are these concurrent taxes that kind of work side by side.
They're consolidated now. They used to be separate,
separate
pools. Right now they're consolidated in one big amount. So you can apply it against either of the issues, gifts or estate.
And think of it this way, folks. If they didn't make these two taxes unified, people would just give everything away right before they die and have no estate tax. So that's why they're saying, well, wait a minute here. We're on to that trick. So they limit how much you can give. As Chris just said, it's $15,000 per person that you give it to. So she could theoretically give $15,000 to her daughter and to her favorite podcast host. And deduct or not have to declare the gift because $15,000 per person you give is kind of a freebie. Mm-hmm. But if you give more than that, and in this case she would be, she has to file a gift and estate tax return declaring that she gave $485,000. She gave $500,000, but remember the first $15,000 is free to her daughter. Mm-hmm. That 485, Chris, will be subtracted from her 11.7. What does that come to? You got the calculator. I don't.
Well, if we want to get down to exact dollars, it's going to be 11,215. So 11,700,000 minus the 485,000 we just quoted is 11,215. Just like my calculator confirmed my sharp mind. So $11,215,000 is going to be left. She's taken $485,000 of the lifetime exclusion amount. So she essentially has another $11,215,000 to, quote, spend on future gifting
and she can give
estate.
That away during life or during death.
Right.
Now, her question is, when it changes, Here's a couple of things. The IRS has already came out and said there will be no clawback. So if you give away 11.7 now to, say, your favorite podcast listener, not listener, your favorite podcast host, to hell with the listeners, you want the host. If you gave away the remaining 11,215 to your favorite podcast host, and then the law changes and goes back or even lower. What if Biden gets in, as she mentioned, and it goes lower? I'm not just picking on Biden. What maybe Trump gets a change of heart if he gets reelected. And now the state tax exemption limit, Chris, is back to $1 million where it was a decade ago. They're not going to claw back the $10.4 million that is no longer exempted.
Right.
So they have made that perfectly clear. No clawback.
So that's protection from current gifting, essentially, in case you gifting with that in mind, that limit, you're trying to stay within the current limit. They're not going to penalize you if they then kind of, otherwise they'd be pulling the rug out from under you. Oops, you thought you could give away the 11.7. Really, you could have only given away $1 million without worrying about taxes. So you're in trouble. So in this case, they're claiming no clawback for previous gifts that were made under the higher exclusion amounts.
Conversely, you can't give away 11.7 million listener, and then the law changes. And let's say it reverts back to a $3 million exemption. They change the law in a couple of years. You don't start over. It's not, okay, well, that was the old rules. Now everybody's got a clean slate, and you can now give away
the three
million.
Yeah, no.
However, if they keep raising the 11.7 million, or they turn it, which they generally do every year for inflation, or they just increase the amount. Hey, we're going to allow $20 million estates to be protected from estate and gift tax. And you gave 11.7 million away. You could then make up the difference and give away that extra. What does that come to?
8.3, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, what were you saying? What were you saying? No.
The 8.3.
I could have sworn you said 9.
No, it was 8.3.
Oh, okay. Gee, I must be having bad ears today.
Well, the acoustics in the attic are terrible.
Yes, I can imagine. You can give away the remaining 9. Oh, see, now you got me doing it, you idiot.
There, I heard 9 there.
8, no. I had it right. You had it wrong.
Whoa, you got me all screwed up now. I thought we just clarified it was 8.
That's what I said. I had it right.
Okay.
Now you got me all flazzled. Whatever I was trying to say, folks, is you now would be able to gift or leave as part of your estate that extra amount if they changed the law and raised it. But there's no do-over when they change the laws. But this clawback provision was huge. It may not impact everyone listening to our show, Chris, but there are some very, very wealthy people out there who are taking advantage of this. Remember, the 11.7 million is per person. You're looking at 23 million per a married couple, if you will. They can do some serious estate planning right now, especially the Mark Zuckerbergs of the world and other rich people like that, or even people not even that rich, just people who have 200 million, 300 million of assets. They can start putting a lot of that in trusts, get a lot of their assets out of their estate. But as Peter Scott used to always report, many of these grantor trusts, even though they technically have no control of the assets, are written by some very intelligent attorneys that pretty much keep the control of the assets well in hand. But all the appreciation from the date of the gift onward are out of the estate for estate tax purposes. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the advantages of putting assets in a trust now. You have a very large estate and gift tax exemption amount. There is going to be no clawback. You can work with a very good attorney, get these assets in trusts where you've effectively made a completed gift where you legally have no ability to control those distributions and put them in a trust that you pretty much control the distributions, even though you don't, but you do. Wink, wink. And these are now out of your estate and can continue to grow estate tax free. So for those wealthy individuals or people who feel the estate tax, like I feel, is going to come back, there will be future administrations far to the other side of the political aisle of the current administration and Senate that will bring the estate tax back. And at levels that will ensnare a lot of people for two reasons. They think it's socially just, and number two, it's low-hanging fruit, and they need all the money that they can get.
Right.
So anyways, interesting question, I thought, not one that we get all the time.
No, that's a good one. And in her situation, just to be clear, the $500,000, if they were to then reduce the limit from the 11.7 to say $5 million, that $500,000 is still going to eat away at the new lower limit. So to answer her, we kind of answered it with this grandiose, exaggerated examples, but to just point blank answer her question, no, it's not going to reset the $500,000, even though, and I see where she's going with this. If they're going to reduce it to say $1 million, she might then regret having eaten half of it, giving it to her daughter, right? So she's saying, would they allow me to kind of redo or ignore that because they kind of pulled the rug out from under me? And the answer is no, that's still going to go against whatever the current limit is when she's trying to take advantage of it. So just keep that in mind.
Okay. Here's an interesting question that I wanted to get to. I'm glad I found it. Goodness. Okay, we've had a question. When I got this in, I reached out to the gentleman and asked for a copy of the letter that he's referencing. Told him to redact everything out, and he did. And because I thought, I've had this question before. And when I got the letter, it was the exact question I thought that it was. But people get these all the time. So this won't apply to everyone listening, but people get letters like this all the time. You'll probably understand and remember this, Chris, when I read this gentleman's letter.
Mm-hmm.
So gives his real name, but says, you can call me George. And we will. And where's he from? Another one who doesn't say where he's from. Okay. Anyways, it begins, dear Jim and Chris, I am 64 years old and just signed up for Medicare, as I will be turning 65 in a few months and I'm in my enrollment window. Soon after I signed up, I received a letter from the Social Security Administration telling me I had funds of about $65,000 existing in a 401k plan with a former employer that was reported to the Social Security Administration in 2001. I have tried searches. Now, he does go on to say, the employer is now defunct. I have tried searches on some of the free databases for 401k plans, but I get no results. How can I locate this money, which should, as a 401k, be insured even if the company is out of business, if I understand that part correctly? As a worst case, can I declare this as a loss for tax purposes? Mm-hmm. Your help on this matter would be greatly appreciated. He got one of the letters that we had seen many a time, well, several times before, Chris, from the Social Security Administration saying, hey, at some point in time, we were notified that you had this account. So he sent me a copy of the letter. He redacted his information out. So I don't see the name of the employer, but it clearly states 401k plan. And he's adamant the employer is now defunct and out of business. And it was valued at $65,000 as the current lump sum value in 2001. It's important to remember, folks, when a participant, when this gentleman terminated employment with a vested retirement benefit, but he's not eligible to receive the benefit until later on, the employer must report this information about the person's benefit to the Social Security Administration. The reason is it allows the Social Security Administration to generate a reminder letter, which is what this gentleman received, that they have a benefit that is due to them. And that's the letter that this guy received. Mm-hmm. It has nothing to do with his eligibility to Social Security. It just is a kind of reminder, hey, don't forget, you got this out there. Now, tracking down this benefit is going to be harder because the employer is no longer in business. Let me also state, listener, there is no insurance. There's no insurance on this. It's not insured. It is protected by ERISA, the Employee Retirement Income Security Act, and it is held in a separate account that has nothing to do with the employer. The employer can't raid a 401k plan and take your money out. So it is protected in that sense. There is a, what is that called, Chris, a Chinese wall? Is that am I get that correct? There's a Chinese wall between it?
I don't know how it would be Chinese in any way, but...
You never heard that saying, there's a Chinese wall?
No.
Oh, no, don't give me that. That
I've
is
heard
a saying.
There's a firewall is what
no,
we usually
no, no.
Refer
maybe
to
tech geeks is a firewall. There is a saying out there that, you know, there's a Chinese wall.
Well, yeah, it's in China. It's called the Great Wall of China.
No fooling.
It's,
that's
it's,
what the...
It's visible from space.
The saying. I'm telling you. Listeners, where are my New Jersey listeners who beat horses to death like I do?
Yeah, and build Chinese walls.
I'm telling you, if
it's possible, I could see it's possible. I've never heard it before.
You never heard the saying?
No.
They put up a Chinese wall?
No. Other than to refer to the Great Wall of China, who was put up by the Chinese in China. Thus, it's called the Great Wall of China.
No, I think that is a, what are those called? Euphemisms? Is that a metaphor?
We'll see.
Or
well,
gymisms?
I'll look it up. It might be a gymism, that's for sure.
But anyways.
I'm sure we'll hear from a listener that if someone can confirm building a Chinese wall is the same as what we would normally call a firewall between, you know, the
dude, it's not
wall
called
of protection.
Firewalls. That no, I can is. Tell you. A firewall, because you're techish.
No, it has nothing to do with tech. That's the wall between your feet and the engine of the car.
That's the floor of the
no,
car.
No, it's called the firewall. It protects you from the flames that could come from the engine, thus called firewall. It predates
If there's
the
anyone
internet.
Else out there who uses the saying, they built a Chinese wall or something like that. I can't even remember my yeah. saying
come
now.
To Jim's defense.
Yes, come to my defense. But your email.
I'm admitting it's possible. There's some I call shenanigans on because I know it's not possible. It's just something you made up or perverted in some way. But this one, I will open the possibility. I'm open to the possibility that this is legit.
Okay, thank you.
Because it seems reasonable. Seems a little weird that it would have anything to do with China, but I'll leave it open to, you know.
Can I get back to this question?
Yeah.
All right. So there are protections built, listener, into this 401k. But the news isn't that great. It's been 19 years since...
So maybe it grew to something enormous. Who knows?
It could.
Yeah.
If it's still there.
Yeah.
You have to... Well, it's been 19 years since the value was reported to the Social Security Administration. I'm assuming you left work about 19 years ago, maybe 20, 21, I don't know. And then the company, as required, reported the value of this account benefit to the Social Security Administration. So... The 401k is technically protected, but I don't know what state you're in. You're going to have to go and look at your state's, I'm going to say this wrong and you're going to laugh your ass off. Is it achievement, excusement, adjustment? What is that word?
You've said it now so many times, you've cluttered my brain with.
It's a weird word.
Yeah.
What is it? You're the smart guy.
Eschewed, like you're going to
not excuse me. It's the account, the achievement. It's now I'm going to have to look it up. I don't have it. Achievement. Excuse me. When I said it last time and Pete was on the show, Mr. Smartass Attorney, he laughed at me. So I know I'm butchering this
word.
Well,
I don't have it in front of me, so I don't know what word you're trying to read.
It's the states. The states, through this power, can take money, unclaimed money. There's a word for it. It's like excusement or eschewment. You're just trying to make me sound like a fool.
No, I know what this word is.
Stop.
No, I'm not. I'm being legit. It's escheatment is what you're thinking of.
Escheatment?
It's not skis. It's not escheatment.
Escheatment?
You were... Yeah, it's E-S-C-H-E-A-T. There's a T in it.
Well, I was way off.
Well, you were close, but you were making it sound like cheese, and that's what was...
This is why most people call it the unclaimed money account, because they gave it a word that no human can pronounce. Anyways, there is these accounts in every state, and believe it or not, retirement accounts can go into them.
Right.
If they are unclaimed after a certain period of time, you may not be finding your 401k. Search your state's unclaimed property accounts. You got to search there. There are also, and I will be sending to you, listener, this email just recently came in. I wanted to jump it to the...
There'll be a time limit is the big issue in a lot of these. Like Colorado has a 21-year time limit. Which is, if they get this money unclaimed under your name and you never claim it, after 21 years, they put it into the state school fund, is what happens to it in Colorado. Now, depending on your state, they all handle this a bit differently, so you'd have to check, see what's going on there. But Jim is right. It's been long enough that even if it, was out there before, you may have lost it due to unclaiming it for such a long period of time.
Okay, I did get a hold of a gentleman named Ian Berger. He is a consultant with the Ed Slott Group, and he's an...
Right now you just got hold of him?
Yesterday.
Oh.
And he is an ERISA attorney.
Oh.
Who better than Ian to tell me what the hell is this person should be doing?
For sure.
He agreed. You got to look at the state unclaimed property account, otherwise known as... Is something mint, and it may very well be there. But he also recommended you go to this website, unclaimedretirementbenefits.com. That is a national registry. It's a secure database listing retirement plan account balances that have been left unclaimed by former participants. So... just check that out. It may have it in there. It's run by a private company, so it may not have everything in there. It's not a government database. But he did recommend you go to that. He also sent me a link to some articles from U.S. News and Forbes that he wanted you to read that also have some information on how to find lost and old retirement accounts. I want to use this as a learning lesson for everyone. That's why I let this email rise to the top. I thought it was kind of important. The man's retired now, finds out there's 65,000 or more. I mean, 19 years of growth, depending on what he had that in. There could be some serious cash in there. So I don't want him worrying about it, but I'm not sure you're going to be able to find it. What I'm getting at, folks... for a lot of you who have multiple accounts all over the place and you're not really tracking them or you don't pay quite a good attention to everything, here's a classic example of why you may want to consider, when you leave an employer, take the money, get it into an IRA. There's pros and cons to it, but moving money to an IRA is generally a good thing, especially for you do-it-yourself Vanguardians anyways. You got all your money at Vanguard. Move the money, get it consolidated, get it in an account that you are actually still kind of participating in the sense you're logging into it. The custodian can see that. You might be calling them with a question every now and then. They know there's an actual human tied to this, and it's not just abandoned. But when you leave a 401k and then the company goes out of business, it is a nightmare to move your account at that point. There is someone at every business that actually has to sign off on every 401k transfer out. And that person no longer works there. And sometimes the custodian can't even release the money because the person who has to sign off on the release ain't even there. And it just becomes this catch-22 or this exercise in futility sometimes. And it's not worth it if you're at an employer that may eventually fold. Take that money and consolidate it, move it, make sure you know what's happening, and hopefully this listener can find it. But I think after 19 years, Chris, of inactivity, that money was turned over to his state, and he needs to look at his state account as well and see if they have record of that money. But they do take what they consider to be, quote-unquote, abandoned retirement accounts. And that one ticks me off the most, Chris. Don't get me going on the state taking your money because you don't log into the account on an active basis. I think those laws are bogus. But a retirement account, Chris, is a long-term vehicle. Of course, it's just sitting there. I'm not putting money in. I'm not taking money out. It's growing. I can't put money in. I don't work there anymore. I'm not taking money out. I'm not retired. I just want the damn money to sit there. Keep your grubby little paws off it. And states take it. That don't get me going on that one.
Well, you know, before a lot of companies, not necessarily these retirement plans, because there's other rules there. By the way, I think I know where you're getting Chinese wall. That's a phrase for information separation that's used. I think you were using it in a context like I would use firewall, where you're trying to block so that things can't, you know, you can't reach over and take money from the other side. There's blocks, right? You've got a wall there. The Chinese wall is usually just to prevent like conflicts of interest because one part of your company knows something that's non-public about other people that are you're dealing with over here on the left-hand side. So you build like this barrier in there. I think that's where you were picking it up. So it kind of
I was right, in
sense.
Other words.
No.
It pains you to say that.
No. I mean, you're in the ballpark maybe, but it's a big ballpark. Anyway, back to the state taking it. Before they had these rules, a lot of companies would sit on them, particularly like phone companies, utility companies. They would amass millions and millions and millions of dollars in deposits that weren't paid back or overpayments that they owed people money back, and they would just claim they could never find these people. So they just kept the money and they officially accounted for it. So if the person ever showed up, they could give it, but they never looked around. They didn't search very hard to give it to you because then they'd have to give you the money back. And they used that as part of their cash balance in you know, kind of liquidity, if you will, in the company. So at least the state said, no, you can't do that. Give it to us. We will actively try to find them. We will publicly show people, you know, that we have this money, so it's much easier for them to find. So I kind of get why they built it. The whole, if you don't claim it after 21 years, then it becomes ours thing. I guess they had to put some limit on it. 21 years, I think, is a little short for this exact reason. You worked a long time ago, I had a 401k, it got turned over to the state, and you didn't realize it for 22 years, and now they've taken your $60,000-some? That seems like a ripoff. I think it should be like 99 years. You're clearly gone and dead by now. You never showed up. It's ours now. That would seem reasonable to me. 21 years seems a little short.
I agree. Okay, we've got a couple of Roth conversion questions.
Nice.
First one is real simple. This is a Pennsylvanian from the fine state of Pittsburgh. Did the Steelers win last night?
No, Pennsylvania is the state from the fine city of Pittsburgh.
Well, I said he was a Pennsylvanian.
Yeah, from the fine state of Pittsburgh.
No, Pittsburgh's a city.
I know, that's what I was pointing out, goofball.
I said it was a state?
A fine state of Pittsburgh.
No, fine state of Pennsylvania in the city of Pittsburgh.
Yes, perfect.
You sure I didn't say it that way?
No,
you did. Anyways, hi, I love your podcast. I have a question about how many different traditional IRA, and traditional 401ks I can convert to a Roth IRA in any given year. For example, I have a rollover IRA, I have a traditional IRA, and I have a 401k at work.
Yep.
That I just learned I can convert these three to a Roth. So I guess he's just learning.
Yep.
Thanks in advance. And he gave his full name. We're going to call him to protect his anonymity. We're going to call him George. And George, I got good news for you. You can convert as many as you want, as often as you want. You can convert a dollar a day for 365 days. If you can find a custodian that'll let you do that. You can convert as often as you want because the government wants their taxes.
Right. They're making it easy. And from their end, they're not going to regulate against that. Right.
They're not going to tell you, oh, no, you can't pay taxes on your money now. We don't need it. No, they want you to do it. So convert till the cows come home. Now, it might be easier to do a nice conversion analysis, get an idea of how much you feel like converting, and with those three different accounts, find out maybe who has the best service, who seems to have the good customer service or investment options, and you may want to concentrate on converting that account first over the others. But it does not matter if you convert a traditional IRA or a traditional 401k, and if you convert it to a Roth IRA and your traditional 401k, if they allow in-service conversions, you can convert the 401k into the Roth option there. Doesn't matter how often you do it, no limit. Anything else you want to add on that?
Nope, it's nice. They make it as easy as possible. The only limit would be your willingness to pay taxes. So that's more the limiting factor than anything else.
True, and you seem new on this. So do remember when you convert, you will pay taxes. And keep in mind, folks, when you start converting and or earning any additional money, because conversions are just going to be declared as income, even though, again, I say this all the time to you do-it-yourselfers, y'all look at your account statements and think you have assets, and y'all talk about it like it's assets. But in the eyes of the IRS, it's income. So when you quote-unquote convert, you are declaring more income. Don't just pay attention to your marginal rates. That's what I'm getting at. You have to look at what each conversion is doing to your effective marginal rate as well, which is essentially the taxes that'll be imposed on the very next dollar. And you convert, essentially, you might be taxed at the marginal rate, but you do have to worry about the effective rate, what it's going to do with all the other taxes that are percolating under the hood, if you will. If you're going to be subject to the NIT surtax or to IRMA penalties if you're over the age of 65 or to losses of ACA premium tax credits if you're trying to qualify for those, or one that gets all the attention, Chris, but the limits are so low, we think it's a red herring now, but the taxation of Social Security benefits. So these are other taxes that you may owe as a result of the conversion. Do keep, or at least pay attention and keep track of those.
Yep.
Okay. Next Roth question from a person from California.
Californian.
All right. Thank you. I was just a little tongue-tied this afternoon, whatever it is. Okay. We're going to call him George as well. And he is from California, the fine city of Los Angeles. Okay, he begins. Hi, Jim and Chris. I've been listening to your podcast for over 2 years now and never miss an episode. Pretty good.
Wow.
I look forward to listening to you guys every Saturday morning while I walk my three dogs. God bless those people. You ever see those people walking like three, four, five dogs at a time? That's crazy. I had a hard enough time walking two dogs at a time.
Well, your dogs are kind of big. Too. Maybe they're small, person's dogs.
My dogs were very well behaved, even though they were big. They definitely listened to me, so they weren't too bad. They just hated to be on a leash, being chessies. They just wanted to be out running. They just didn't understand this whole leash thing. Okay, I currently max out my 401k. I am not eligible to contribute to a Roth IRA, and we near maxed out on our Roth IRA contribution limits for my wife. My wife and I both have traditional IRAs with $40,000 and $50,000 respectively in them. I do not want to convert my $40,000 IRA to a Roth and pay taxes on it. So I would then be eligible to do a backdoor IRA contribution. In other words, folks, what he doesn't want to do is take his $40,000 IRA, convert it to a Roth, only so he can do the backdoor. He doesn't want to pay all those taxes. And what he means by the back door, it's called the backdoor Roth. We call it contribution, even though it sometimes goes by backdoor Roth conversion. There is no need to go in through the back door to convert an IRA to a Roth IRA. Anyone of any income or net worth can convert their IRA to a Roth IRA as many times as they want, just like we told the last listener. But this listener, folks, has 40 grand in his name inside an IRA. He makes too much money to put money into a Roth as a contribution. Nor does he want to take that 40 grand and convert it to an IRA in an effort to get rid of it, so he would then have no IRAs at all. Because the strategy would then be to do a backdoor Roth contribution. And the way that works is anyone of any income means can contribute, as long as you have a job and income, can contribute to a non-deductible traditional IRA. In other words, the money you put in to that IRA is after-tax money. It's non-deductible. Anyone can do that. So you could put money into a non-deductible IRA on Monday, and literally now, because Congress and the SECURE Act have, not the Act itself, but the documents supporting the Act, the IRS and the government have said backdoor Roth contributions are perfectly fine, no problem. So you put money in on Monday into a non-deductible IRA, and what do you do on Tuesday, Chris?
Can convert it.
Convert it tax-free to a Roth. But he's trying...
tax-free because the taxes have already been paid.
Because the taxes...
Just to be clear.
Right. Yeah. Because you put after-tax, non-deductible money in.
I'm surprised. I'm hung up on his comment he doesn't want to pay taxes on a conversion. He's obviously willing to pay taxes if he's trying to get money in a Roth, because you, by definition, must pay the taxes
on
getting the money into the Roth. So his aversion to doing a conversion... Unless he's under the false assumption that he has to convert the entire 40 in order to accomplish it, he could move it over small bits at a time if he doesn't want to do it. But the source of the income causing the tax obligation isn't so important. Whether it's his earnings, who then are taxed, and then he puts the balance in a Roth he's wanting to through the back door, or he distributes money from the IRA... kind of quote distribute, recognizing it as income, paying the taxes on it so it ends up in the Roth, he's still paying taxes on income. So I'm not sure what the hang up is on his expressly opposed to the conversion at all of the 40 that's in there.
I'm glad you picked up on that, because that's exactly where I was going with this.
Sorry to jump on.
Oh, no. I think it's fine. It shows me that my young protege is learning.
Your what protege?
My young
protege.
Yeah,
emphasis on young.
My That's, younger protege yeah. by less than three
Notice,
years.
What? Less than three? It's at least three, isn't it? I don't know. It's significant. We'll just call it that.
It is not significant.
It's significant.
I could hold my breath. A couple
weeks is not much. 3+ years or so, that's significantly
it's not
younger.
That much.
Anyway.
Anyways, when you see what he's getting at, it's... What he's going to try to do, it made me scratch my head. You're still paying taxes, I'm thinking. Now, let's just pause before I get on to the rest of his email, folks. What he's got an aversion to doing is get rid of the IRA he has so he can start doing the back door. The reason he's got to get rid of that IRA is a rule called the pro rata rule, or what Chris and I have called, the thanks of Ed Slott, who coined this, the cream in the coffee rule. He has $40,000 of black coffee, $40,000 of pre-tax money. It's never been taxed sitting in an IRA. He wants to be able to contribute $7,000 a year to a non-deductible IRA and then convert that to a Roth, quote-unquote tax-free, which Chris has pointed out is not really tax-free because you had to put after-tax money in to get it there. But nonetheless, the strategy works that way. If he has an existing IRA, that $7,000, even if it was in a separate IRA, Chris, at a separate custodian and never touched his $40,000 IRA, when he goes and converts the $7,000, in our example, on Tuesday, he put the money in on Monday in a non-deductible IRA and converted it on Tuesday, the IRS considers what, Chris? Some of that money came from where?
Some of the, when he tries to convert it, some of it's coming from coffee, some of it's coming from cream, pro rata in the amounts that are represented in the account as a whole.
Right. So $7,000 represents what percent of $47,000?
It's going to be exactly 14.89%, so almost 15%.
So about only 15% of that $7,000 conversion is quote-unquote tax-free.
Right.
The remaining 85, he's going to have to pay taxes on.
Yep.
So he paid taxes on the $7,000 when it went in, and now he's going to have to pay taxes again on 85% of the $7,000 when he moves it to the Roth IRA because of what's known as the pro rata rule, otherwise the cream and the coffee rule. The cream is the $7,000 of after-tax contributions, even though it never touched his IRA, even though it never touched his $40,000 IRA at all. It's considered one big IRA. It's considered moving in. And when you take that little mini moo, that's my example, that little mini moo, foil topped little tube of plastic, and you open it and you pour it into your cup of coffee, your black coffee, boom, that cream instantly spreads throughout that coffee, and it's impossible to take a sip of just black coffee. So his solution, Chris, is look, I don't want to do that. So therefore, I can't do the back door. So he says, how about this, guys? Now, where would I leave off in his email? Okay. Is there an option for me to do a backdoor Roth 401k? Meaning, I would put after-tax 401k contributions into my 401k and then move that money into my Roth 401k. All while still maxing out my traditional 401k contributions. So is there an option for doing that? Maybe, maybe not. It's going to be up to the employer, but it is not going to work the way you think, listener. So let me explain. Pro rata rule is going to come back and bite you in the hiney again. So the first thing you've got to find out from the employer is, do they have a Roth option? I'm assuming they do, or you wouldn't have asked the question. If they do have a Roth 401k option, do they allow in-service conversions? Not all do. They may have the Roth 401k option, but not allow Roth 401k conversions. In-service Roth 401k conversions. If they allow both of those, yes, we have a Roth 401k, and yes, you can do conversions. You have to now ask them a third question. Do you allow after-tax contributions to your 401ks? Not all companies allow it. The IRS says it's okay, and you can put, goodness, I don't know these dollar amount limits anymore, but 50-something thousand is your max limit. It rises every year. 50-something, Chris can look it up if he wants, but 50-something thousand right. is the max that can go into your 401k that would be comprised of your elective deferrals, your employer's match, and after-tax voluntary contributions if allowed. They don't have to allow them. So they have to allow all three of those. And you might think if you've got all three of those, you're in the woods.
In the clear.
In the clear, out of the woods. See, I got it.
Yeah, I know. I just prompted you a little bit to get there faster.
I was mixing up, you're lost in the woods.
Yeah.
With
that's a typical Jimism. Mixing up the opposite of what you're trying to say in with the thing that you're actually trying to say.
You know, someone emailed me the other day and said they didn't know what I meant by the... Apparently, I said sharpest tack in the draw.
No, sharpest tool in the box.
No, I thought I said sharpest
tack
in the draw.
That's what you were defending. And sharpest knife in the drawer is more common. Sharpest tool in the shed is also common, but you threw kind of the tool in the box, which I think, which is legit, just not quite as well known around here.
Huh, never heard of that. Whatever.
The sharpest tack, that's the one you're mixing up. That's someone who's sharp as a tack. Actually, I remember this one because I didn't call it out. I was being nice that day, but thanks to this listener, they called it out.
Yes.
You said the sharpest tack in the drawer. You mixed up the sharpest knife in the drawer with he's sharp as a tack. Those are two different sayings. This is a perfect Jimism example, mixed them together.
You done?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Just I'm going to clarify for everyone. So we.
I'm sure they needed this clarification. Yeah. Back to the listener's question. So you may think you're out of the... No, out of the woods. I was right. You may think you're out of the woods and in the clear. How's that?
Perfect.
You may think you've got it covered. They allow after-tax contributions. Mm-hmm. They allow conversions. They have a Roth option. What's going to happen next, Chris?
Well, this one, we should have talked about this a little bit because without any further segregation, it's going to come out pro rata.
Exactly.
But I have discovered that there appears to be some employers that sleeve those after-tax and before-tax contributions in the 401k so they're able to move just to the after-tax piece.
And that's what they have to ask next.
So that was something. And this, years ago on the podcast, we talked about this a little bit and didn't make that clarification or get to that level of detail. And there was actually on one of the online forums that has a lot of financial planning, retirement planning, brain trusts going on in there. We're arguing about how wrong our comments were because there were these sleeves that you could move over and it wasn't going to happen pro rata. It depends on the employer. They were coming at it like from their employer, they allow it. So they just assumed it was the standard. We were talking about it kind of more generically where they hadn't defined this sleeving idea or these separate compartments for it. But oftentimes there are not separate compartments. So you're going to be having it mixed in. It's going to come out pro rata.
Exactly. And I've seen it both ways.
Yep.
Some employers track it. Some don't. Essentially, the pro rata rule will apply to any assets you have access to. So if the employer limits the conversions to just those assets that they have sequestered off and are tracking separately and won't let you convert the others, that really is ironclad. Now, some people have told me that the employers don't necessarily have to sequester it and limit. They just have to track it. I'm not quite sure which one is right, but the employers will know if they have their 401k set up that way or not.
Right.
But that is the fourth question
right.
You need to get an answer to. All of this, listener, to avoid something that Chris pointed out to you.
Right.
You're not saving anything. If you were willing, let's just say $10,000 is what you wanted to do, listener. You were going to take $10,000 of money you already paid taxes on and put it into your 401k, only to then convert it, quote unquote, tax-free. You still had to earn $10,000 on that. Now, I get where he's going with this, perhaps, Chris. Perhaps if he was to convert his $40,000 IRA, he would have to add that on top of his already, that $10,000. Mm-hmm. That conversion has to be added right. on top of that.
Right. So he might be at the edge of a marginal
right.
bracket he's trying to manage.
Exactly.
So there might be some reasons, but his outright his statement that I don't want to touch this just seems like he's dismissed a possible straightforward approach to filling up a Roth.
But there's one other question he could ask his 401k. Do you know what that is, Chris? That would solve a lot of this easily. Oh, come on.
Quite sure where you're going with this, unless I'm...
He could move the $40,000 IRA.
Oh, yeah. I thought we already covered that, but you're right. No, yeah, that's...
Listener, if you don't want to deal with all this, or your employer doesn't answer yes to all four of those questions, you've got to ask them. Ask them a fifth question. Does your 401k accept transfers in from IRAs? I have yet to find a 401k that doesn't, but I'm sure there's some out there that don't. Nearly all of them do, because the more money they have, the lower the cost to the employer of that 401k. So they love to get money into the 401k. Take your IRA, 40 grand, move it into the 401k. Now, you have to be happy with the investments. Remember the listener we had didn't want to do it? Because his 401k was with a, we never mentioned the mutual fund family, and I'm not going to name it, but it was a very high fee mutual fund family, and he was paying over 1% in fees on his 401k, remember? And he didn't want to move his $100,000 in, and we couldn't blame him. So he didn't want to do that. But assuming your 401k has good investment choices and reasonably low fees, you could move the four, assuming they take it, that's the fifth question. You're going to take the 401k, you're going to move the 401k into the IRA. The other way around, damn it. Yeah. See, it's getting late in the morning, day, evening. You're going to take the 401k, you're going to move, no.
You can move the IRA, you're going to move the into,
IRA
the 401k.
Into
you
the,
now
thank
have
you.
An empty IRA.
Thank you.
So no more cream and coffee. It's empty of all the coffee. You now pour the cream in it, right? Doing a backdoor Roth technique and turning around and
converting
that over to the Roth, and you're all set to go. There's some caveats, right? You don't take back out the 401k money and put it back in the IRA, even if they would allow that. If you're of the age and the rules are such that you could roll it back out, you don't want to do that until the next year, or till, you know, the next year you're going to do it again. You don't want to roll it out, obviously, but don't get antsy and try to roll it out too quickly, because if it's got a balance in there at the end of the year, you're going to get sucked into the pro rata rule. We've mentioned that several times in the past.
Yeah, leave it in there anyways, because you're going to want to do this strategy
every year. Over and over again, probably.
But that would allow $7,000 in. Mm-hmm. You also mentioned, you didn't mention your wife anymore, but you mentioned she had a $50,000 IRA. If she has a job and her employer allows transfers in, she can do the same thing with her 50K IRA, and you can get another $7,000. Now, I'm assuming $7,000 that you're over the age of 50. If you're under the age of 50, it's only $6,000. So do pay attention to those contribution rules based on your age. But you can get another $7,000 if your wife is over the age of 50 into hers as well, for a total of $14,000. And now you're not going to be dealing with any of these other issues that you have to iron out with your employer. It's just, to me, a more straightforward, easy way of doing it.
Right.
So just wanted to point that out to him.
Perfect. And on that note, we need to wrap up for the day. Yeah. Got another appointment to head to. So we want to thank everybody for joining us here on the Retirement and IRA Show Q&A edition. If you want to send in your own question or reach out to us or learn a little bit more about us, the best way to do that is go to the website jimhelps.com. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. On there, you'll find a contact form. You can reach out to us or send us in a suggested question. You can also read a little bit about our background, our philosophy, our approach. Our best way to learn our approach and philosophy, of course, is to listen to the podcast for a while, but there's a bit more information on the services we offer right there on that website. So we appreciate everybody listening. Jim, do you have anything else to say before we bail out?
Nope. If anybody has any questions, again, send them to us. You can also email them directly at jim@jimhelps.com. And we do want to report again, we have a pause in place on the accepting of new retirement planning clients. But if anyone is interested in chatting to us to see if we would be a good fit and to get on our pre-list, if you will, before we reopen, that's where scheduling a coffee and a second opinion comes in handy. And of course, for anyone interested in Roth conversion analysis or advanced tax planning strategy, Bob, our CPA, does not have a pause on accepting new clients, nor do we have a pause on assisting people with asset management. I know we don't talk about that a lot on our show, but these are services that are not paused. Only Chris, because he can't like get everything done, but only Chris is, and his team, he's got a team of what? You got four people, right? You got Junior, Greg, and you. That's four. Yeah. Only they are paused. But Chris, any news? Is still the fourth quarter of 2020 a potential?
Which is right around the corner.
It's right
now,
around the
right?
corner,
couple
but it's
more
a big
weeks.
Quarter. It's 3 months long.
Sure.
So doesn't mean.
I'm sure we'll have good news in the fourth quarter.
Sometime in the fourth quarter?
Yeah.
And that news wouldn't be it's Christmas and you bought me a really nice gift?
That is possible news, but less likely than other news.
Less likely. Well, I'm going to have to return your gift, which means I have to drive it back to the dealer now.
Okay.
All right. Well, you blew that. You would have had a beautiful gift.
Okay.
I won't tell you what it was.
That's probably best. Have a good day. Everyone else, thanks for listening.
You have listened to Jim on the radio, read his quotes in the media, and enjoyed his banter on iTunes. But even now, you may wonder what sets Jim Salmier and Associates apart from other financial planning companies. The answer is quite simple. Jim's diverse team of professionals specializes in retirement planning. They form a lifelong relationship with you and measure their success not through product sales, but through the security and prosperity you may achieve in your retirement. Jim's entire team shares his unwavering commitment to placing their clients' best interests first while offering their services at fair prices with full disclosures. The professionals at Jim Salmier & Associates are available to assist you with your retirement planning needs. Visit jimhelps.com to schedule your complimentary coffee and a second opinion meeting. That's Jim, HELPS.com. Or call 970-530-0556.
The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer, member FINRA, SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Salmier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Salmier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.